When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, you guys, welcome to the midweek edition of the Temple of Hoop podcast. We are live on Green Room, try to come to you guys once a week. Kings, we just watched the Boston and the Warriors game. Kind of got the air taken out of it because of Steph Curry's injury. But any initial takeaways before we get deeper into it?
I thought that, the Boston defense is for real. It's legit. Definitely something that is going to be a problem to deal with in the playoffs, and teams going to have to be prepared for sure.
Yeah, before, let's get it out the way. Do you think the Marcus Smart play on Curry was dirty, or do you think he was just playing hard? I know he's got a history, but, you know, Curry, the Bay, the Warrior fans were ready to put his hand on a stick. So do you think it was a dirty play or fair or foul?
Honestly, when I first looked at it, I thought it was a play on the ball. But then Sonny and other people brought up a good point. Though it's kind of one of those things, I guess. You know how you have unwritten rules in baseball? I think for Hoop, it was just kind of unwritten rule type of thing where it's a dangerous play. The guy's legs is right next to the ball. So it's kind of like, I understand why people are frustrated, but Marcus Smart, he was just going for the ball. He wasn't trying to do nothing, you know, egregious.
Yeah, that's the same thing I took. I thought the Clay foul was dirty, though. He just did a full-on karate kick. That was that was wild. We got our first speaker wants to come up. Hey, Cole, talk to us. Questions, something you want to talk about, talk to us.
So it's interesting watching the Celtics defense. It's like really it's impenetrable unless you have like one of those offensive guys who's just too strong or too tall or too quick or like shoots too well. If you don't have one of those guys, then it's like you stand absolutely no chance. And that's just been interesting to watch. Like Embiid, Giannis, they're those type of guys. But even like a lower level shot maker, I don't want to disrespect guys like DeRozan or LaVine, but they don't really move me versus this Celtics defense. Like you really need a special guy. Curry could have been that guy tonight, except he got hurt. But you really need that type of dude, like the guys I mentioned, if you're going to beat this team. That's why I don't like the Bulls or the Heat chances against the Celtics. Brooklyn does scare me. Milwaukee scares me. And Sixers, they're kind of fraudulent, but Embiid's a monster. So, yeah, that's just my thought. So, and the way the standings are playing out, it's Boston would get Bulls round one, the Heat round two. So that'd be pretty ideal. But, you know, I don't want to get too confident or anything. But, yeah, the defense is legit.
Yeah, that was the thing for me. When I look at the West, I don't look at the seeding. I look at the matchups because that's all what it's going to come down to. I think the first six teams are all going to be pretty good. And even Toronto and the Nets won't be pushovers. That's who I think will end up coming out of the play-in situation. Because I had tweeted earlier that I felt like Jordan Poole had to be big in this game because the Celtics defense was so good. So you need a player that's going to be able to score in a rock fight. And I think Poole's the closest thing the Warriors had to that. Outside of Curry, but you're right. Once Curry went down, it was pretty much all bad for that happening, like for it to become a game because that was, you know, he's their guy and it's two good teams. You lose Curry, Celtics favored. Yeah, you're 100% correct. The Celtics defense is for real, best defense in the league, in my opinion.
Yes.
Tatum and Brown playing like this, they're going to be a very tough out. So, yeah, I'm with you.
For sure, man. All right, good looking.
JB, you there?
Yes, sir. You can hear me?
How's everything going?
What's going on, y'all? How y'all doing?
Good, good.
So, Maples and Kings, what y'all think about how the East is playing out so far in terms of, like, the seeding, in terms of, like, Miami and Milwaukee separating themselves? Do you think, like, any of the teams under them could catch them, like get to the 2 seed or the 1 seed?
I see the Celtics making a push, you know what I'm saying? I'm not sure if they could catch the top two, but they're definitely making a push to be in the top three. I think those two are going to be comfortably in, you know, that top two seeding. And but at the end of the day, though, really, like, it's the East. A lot of teams just match up with each other in the East. And I think from, you know, a lot of the first round series are just going to be tough series. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's going to be hard for somebody to sweep somebody unless, you know, because even in the AC, you got, you know, the Nets probably going to be the AC. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, it's just hard to find any sweeps in the East right now. Honestly, it's going to be hell throughout the whole playoff series in the East.
Yeah, I'm with Kings there. It's all about matchups for me, because, like, right now, if Milwaukee plays Brooklyn and Kyrie's allowed to play, you know what I mean? I don't think they really care about being on the road, Kyrie. And I think the key thing about Kyrie is, as a guy who has had injury issues, him being completely fresh compared to everybody else is going to play such a big role late in the season. You can see it, like, kind of now. He's got fresh legs. Guys have gone through 60, 70 games. He just looks like a step quicker than everybody out there right now. And I think that's, like, kind of attributing to him going on this crazy scoring binge lately. So that definitely, you know, kind of tips things a little bit towards the Nets' favor. But I'm not sleeping on the Heat, man. A lot of people think the Heat can't score enough. But, man, I'm not going to count out a Spo team, man. I'm just not.
Tyler Herro going to have to score like a star for them, though. I mean, he's having a great year, but he's going to have to keep doing it, you know, every single series for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Anything else, JB?
Yeah, I got two more. So I was wondering, because, you know, Jokic, like, he's probably been the best player in the league, but I don't know, it kind of feels weird to give, like, a back-to-back MVP to a 6 seed, you know what I mean? So I'm wondering what y'all think, like, Giannis or Embiid got to do, like, the rest of the season to sort of, like, you know what I mean, push it over the top for them. Or do you think Jokic is just going?
I mean, MVP for me is tough because it feels like every few years the criteria changes. You know what I mean? So now we're in this thing where they're taking into consideration, you know, Jokic is missing X amount of, you know, help around him, which is fine. You know, that's definitely something to consider. But it seems like the key factor for MVP changes every year. You know, it used to be the best player on the best team, and then went to the best guy and the best stats, and it just went to the best player for a while. And then they got fatigue from Jordan and LeBron, so we just started sprinkling these other variables. So I don't know. But right now, I told Kings this the other day. If it goes to Embiid or Joker, I'm not complaining either way. Like, I would probably lean Joker at this point, but if it goes to Embiid, I'm not complaining. Like, that's how close it is for me. Like, those guys are just on a different level right now.
Yeah, you know, you also got to look at the fact that, you know, the Nuggets still have a pretty good record. So I just think in today's NBA, where so many teams are all competitive, when you look at Joker and the fact that he's lost so many guys and he's still putting up wins close to these teams that have, you know, a lot better health relatively, and then you look at the numbers and his impact, it's like you can't really fault people for wanting to reward him with that MVP. But, you know, it's going to be hard because Embiid is hooping and Giannis is hooping. So, you know, if they kind of make a late end push and they kind of solidify themselves in the win column, it's probably going to go to one of those two. But if Joker makes a big run at the end, he can definitely win it. So I think it's just whoever finishes strong from those three, record-wise and performance-wise.
Yeah, I think if Joker stays out of the play-in, it's his. They're a game and a half over Minnesota right now for hanging on to that play-in spot with 12 games left. So if they can hang on to that, I think he'll get the MVP. But like I said, they give it to Embiid. I'm not complaining at all. Man, he's definitely earned it with his play this season.
For sure, for sure. And my last one, I hate that I got to do this, but I got to do this. So the Lakers, right?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Listen, I get the team is terrible. You know what I'm saying? I get, like, all that, right? LeBron is, like, in my opinion, he's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen play in my life. I'm a little younger than y'all, so you know what I'm saying? But he's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen in my life. But shouldn't he be getting more, like, criticism right now? Because, first of all, he put this fucking terrible team together. And second of all, he, like, I don't want to say he quit on the Lakers, you know what I'm saying? Because he's still, like, hooping. Well, he's still hooping on offense. But, like, he don't even be, like, crossing half court sometimes. And, like, I understand he's mad, bro. But he don't want to put this team together. How mad can you fucking be? Like, am I tripping? Or, like, what y'all think about that, man?
Well, I think you can't put the entirety of the front office decisions on him. I think he definitely had a say in it. But I don't think you can put all that on him. You know, you got to, at some point, you got to give Rob and Jeannie a lot of blame for Jeannie for being cheap and Rob for some questionable decisions like the Caruso thing. Like, LeBron wanted him back. That's all Jeannie not wanting to cut a check for a championship level role player. Like, you can't put that on LeBron. We keep hearing these conflicting reports about Westbrook, who wanted him, who didn't, DeRozan. My thing is, Popovich was not going to deal with the Lakers anyway, in my opinion. Like, we've seen this. He traded Kawhi for some magic beans opposed to a Laker offer, which included, you know, a lot of good players. You know, that's how Pop feels about the Lakers. So, you know, I don't think he was going to deal with them anyway. But you can't put the all the GM stuff on LeBron. He may have had a say, but ultimately that's on Rob and Jeannie. On the court, all I can say is he's 37, man. He's not supposed to be carrying the year, year 19. That's all I'll say.
I feel you. Yeah, I feel 30, you. It's crazy, though.
This is not what he envisioned at all. They got to get AD to stay on the floor, man. Kings, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, you know, on the floor, you know, LeBron's always had that passive-aggressive demeanor and those antics when things go wrong, except back when he was, you know, younger and healthy, he could still carry the team anyway. But obviously, like Maple said, he's older. He's definitely chasing Kareem, so he's going to prioritize certain aspects of the on-the-court hoop, you know, yep. In this case, scoring. But, you know, in terms of the blame for off-the-court, yeah, you know, I blame him and AD for pushing for Russ, but I'm going to keep it 100. You know, he did want Dame first. Obviously, Dame said no, and obviously that was a pipe dream. But then they did want DeMar, and I was part of people in the offseason, you know, even though I kind of thought the DeMar fit was going to be a little bit tough because I didn't know if he was going to be good on his spacing, but I liked his playmaking, the fact that he could shoot the mid-range. So I was like, you know, DeMar would actually make it work because he can actually shoot the mid-range. You know, he's a smart player. He can play make. I was one of those who was like, you know, I thought that, hey, don't get hard cap because you will hurt yourself from getting better. But if Jeannie and them was going to be cheap anyway, what was the point of being scared of the hard cap? The hard cap would have helped them out. So now they couldn't overspend. Like, they wouldn't even be tempted to overspend because it's like
they'd had an excuse.
They would have had the excuse. So it's like, it's you didn't want to get DeMar because the hard cap, and then you want to get rest and say, okay, we have a chance to get flexible and get better and spend, but you don't spend anyway. So it's like, bruh, that literally signifies how poorly ran like the Lakers are from top to bottom, bro. It's like you knew you didn't want to spend that much money. So instead of you to actually get the better player and give yourself a built-in excuse, you got the worst player and you didn't spend anyway. That was the only flexibility Russ gave you and you didn't do it anyway. So it's like, it's just piss poor execution. That's not on Bron. That's the front office.
Yeah. And I think the last thing, cause you know, me and Kings both kind of over the Lakers this season. The thing is, I think a lot of people make the mistake of trying to blame the Lakers' issues on one thing, but it's not. They got bad front office work, bad coaching, lackluster effort, and injuries. Like, it's all that contributing to what we've seen on the product we've seen out there. So I can't just blame one thing for what we saw.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Bomb, what's going on? Am I pronouncing that right?
It's Liban. Liban. It's all good, though.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. How you guys doing?
Good.
I'm good. I was gonna ask you guys, what do you guys think about like the Giannis fatigue? Like, I've noticed that especially this year, because like bro, he's still like Giannis is still dominating like every night, and it's just like, you know, like whatever, you know. It's just Giannis, like he's just
doing what he does, and like no one's paying attention to it. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, to me,
like, what do you mean? Like, you just don't understand like how he doesn't get tired or what?
No, I don't understand the honest fatigue. Like, how people kind of like,
you know what it was? I think in Kings has talked about this a lot. His game is not super aesthetically pleasing. You know what I mean? So, you know, he's going to get side eyes anyway for his production. They think it's all power. And he's just 7 feet and can run and jump, which is a cold description, because that's like describing JaVale McGee, right? There's obviously some skill involved with him being 7 feet and being able to move like that. I just think his game's not aesthetically pleasing, so people nitpick. And I think that leads to, you know, kind of the fatigue. Kings, what about you, bro? I know that's your Naeed, your brother, man.
Yeah, you know, it's always going to be fatigue when a guy puts up those type of numbers the way he does. I mean, you've seen the complaints even with LeBron, and LeBron had the marketing machine. LeBron was also an above the rim player, you know, super bouncy, super athletic, making highlight plays, but he still had the fatigue on him when it came to the MVP. So it's like fatigue's always going to hit certain players, but when you play a certain way too, on top of that, it just adds to the whole whole dilemma. So you know what I mean? So it's like for a lot of people, it's like, oh man, we already seen, you know, Giannis, you know, put these numbers up the same type of way, you know, open system, he's gonna run, get his. I mean, granted, this season he's added a lot of stuff. He's added, you know, his pull up is more smoother, you know what I'm saying? He's better at getting to his spots, his dribble and handle is tighter. But it's like, you know, fans don't really care about that, you know what I mean? Because they still see Giannis. And his main, you know, game is get up and down, power hoop, bully ball, get in, you can't stop me. But then they see guys like Joker, you know what I mean? Like, they haven't seen a center pass like that ever, you know what I mean? And they see a guy like Embiid hitting step backs at that size. It's like, it's like a new shiny toy, you feel me? So it's like, they look at those two and it's like, yeah, you know, we've seen Giannis. He already won back-to-back MVPs. He won his finals MVP. He won his ring. That's like they see what Joker's doing with the narrative of carrying his team. And they see Embiid moving like that at his size with his skill set on the outside. So it's like it's just one of those things. He's suffering right now from, you know, voter fatigue, fan fatigue. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how people finish, how they finish this run. Because I still think at the end of the day, with his numbers and the way the Bucks are playing, the media is still going to give him that respect. So if he finishes strong and the other two kind of flop at the end, he's still going to have a good shot at the MVP.
Right, like in Kings, right? If they were to ask you who the best player in the league right now is, you would go Giannis, right? So I think, you know, he has that respect at least.
Yeah, and a lot of people would go Giannis too. Absolutely. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they just don't want to see him get the MVP again. You know, it's just that. It's just how that goes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, let him win another title, and then I can't wait for that to happen. But yeah, my second question was, what do you guys think about Memphis? Like, how do they match up against, you know, obviously Phoenix and Golden State? Like, I'm going to be really interested to see, like, especially in a playoff setting, how they match up with those two.
So here, my thing with Memphis, so the Phoenix has beat them up pretty good the last couple of years, but the one that intrigues me is the Warriors matchup. For some reason, the last couple of years, they have just given the Warriors hell, man. Even this year when the Warriors were hot, they ran into some trouble against Phoenix, man. I don't know what it is, but they just get a lot of hell from the Grizzlies. I'm very interested in seeing that second round series if they can make it happen. And I'm looking forward to that. Ja Morant versus Steph is always must-see TV. You got Dylan Brooks coming back. You got Desmond Bane, Steven Adams. Jaren Jackson is on the cusp of stardom against the Warriors championship experience. I think that is going to be a war in the second round series, man. Kings, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, with Memphis, they got the high-flying superstar who can make big plays, can get hot takeover games. They got the all-world versatile defender, Jaren Jackson Jr., who can also space the floor. Then they got tough guards tough wings who are long. And they got youth athleticism. Then they got a tough big, and Steven Adams is going to do the dirty work. You know what I mean? And free those guys up to play to their game. So, man, they're really built well. They also love each other. They love playing with each other. So they got that chemistry factor. They got that mental factor with each other. They don't give up on each other. It's going to be tough to put them away. And they match up well with the Warriors. You know, that's one of the things that we've seen with Memphis this season is that youth, you know, that versatility, the length, the toughness, it bothers Golden State. You know what I mean? So I it's going to be fun to see. I ultimately think it's going to come down to Golden State versus Phoenix in the Western Conference Final, because I think those two, what they have over the Memphis is that they've been through the wars. You know, Memphis is still a young team. They don't know what it's like to go through a long playoff run. So it's like, you know, Golden State, Phoenix, now after last year's run, they've been through the wars. They know what it is to make adjustments. They know what it is to play, you know, a tough series, have to grit out wins. So it's like that experience, I think, in the end of close games in those series is gonna show. And, you know, guys like Draymond, guys like Klay, you know, guys like CP3, Aiden Book, Crowder, they're going to execute and they're going to, you know, finish plays off. Where I think you might see Brooks or Bain or Jaren Jackson Jr. or maybe even Morant here and there make a few blunders because, you know, they're just not used to that environment.
Right. Yeah, I think that's all fair. The youth first, the experience, man. It'll be fun to see if we can get that, though, man.
Yeah, I had one last question. I'm really sorry I have to ask this, but let's just think in the hypothetical situation where the Lakers are a serious franchise, right? Oh,
man, y'all with these Lakers questions, man. It's good basketball. It's good basketball going on. Y'all got to do this. Nah, go ahead, man.
Let's think if the Lakers are a serious franchise. Like, clearly we've seen, which really pisses me off is that, you know, Bron still has it. Like, Bron really still has it. So, like, what kind of team, like, do you want to see the Lakers surround AD and LeBron with next year? And I don't even know if it's possible, but.
Shooting and IQ, man. That's what you got to look for. Shooting and IQ, another point of attack defender. That all comes down to. And I think a lot of people are overestimating the difficulty that it's going to have be to trade Westbrook. And as an expiring deal, you can always find a way to get a ball for a team looking to save money. Like, I think the Knicks could be possible. OKC could be possible. Atlanta could be possible. Just teams who are just looking to get flexibility, you know, down the road. I think the Knicks want to have their books clear for Zion. So I definitely think there is a path to get Westbrook off to the Knicks. You know what I mean? So I definitely think they can move him. Once they do that, it's just a factor of using that space or getting the correct pieces back. And I think that's where the challenge will be for, you know, Rob Pelinka.
Man, I'm not even going to hold you. I've been kind of over the Lakers experience with LeBron, to be quite honest with you. I've been on the just trade them on, go rebuild, because honestly, I mean, the things that they need to do, you can't trust this front office to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, the ideal situation would be to try and ship Russ off for expiring role players, right, with who are useful and can play off LeBron and AD, who can do a multiple variety of things like shoot and defend. Obviously not the best names, but just decent quality starters, and then lean on Bron and AD. But that's even then, that would cost, you know, first round assets or two. And it's like, they've made it clear that I don't think they want to get off of that. You know what I mean? At least unless it's for, like, obviously, like a star player. Like, they've made that clear that they want to move Russ's contract and those first for a star type player. So, yeah, man, the chance to build a proper team around those two was last offseason, and they completely blew it. And it's just for them, it's like they really have to just restart because the assets are minimal. It's going to be tough for them to get better this offseason. So they're just stuck, bro. And it's like, the type of maneuvering that it would take for them to finesse something, some quality in the offseason like this, they just don't have it in that front office. Like, let's just be honest here. They don't have the talent in the front office to be able to execute what needs to be executed.
Well said.
Yeah, that's all I had. I appreciate you guys. Appreciate you guys.
All good, man. Lyndon, you there?
Yeah, what's up, guys?
Lyndon, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? I have a question about hoops, but more just about, like, what exactly are the plans for certain teams. Like, it looks like Ben Simmons is probably not going to play this season because I doubt they just, you know, throw him into the Wolves in the playoffs. Do you think that, like, recently a lot of stars have been, like, comfortable just throwing seasons away? Like, I feel like Bradley Beal's about to throw another season away. He didn't want to go into the bubble. And, like, Zion just throwing a season away. Is it like a new mentality or something where people are just like, I'll get another one? What's that about?
I think these guys are more cognizant of their long-term viability, and I think that leads to these decisions. With Ben Simmons, you definitely don't want to mess, with the back injury. That could be, career-threatening at certain points, so I don't think he's going to push that. Bradley Beal, I don't know, man. I think he's, holding out for this Supermax, and once he signs that, he'll maybe play more. But I'll say this. So Kawhi signed that 4-year extension right away, and then he started to, work out more and probably possibly push to try to play today. So I think it just has to do with these guys, being in a long-term deal and secure before they make that type of decision. You know what I mean? And Ben is weird because he just signed an extension. So, I think he's probably seriously hurt because he wants to be in Brooklyn. So if he could play, he would play. So I don't think Ben's throwing away a season. It's just that maybe he didn't condition like he should have, in his time off or rehab like he should have. I think he's just kind of paying the price for that right now.
Also, second question for the both of you guys. Are you guys really moved by the Nets? Because I'm not moved, man. Even when Kyrie scores 60, I'm like, he's playing once a week, guys. Are y'all really moved? I think I saw, I forgot the guy's name on Twitter. I think it's Nate or something. He said that he feels bad for the Miami Heat because they're going to lose to the Nets in the first round. And I don't think that's going to happen in the slightest. What do you guys think about the Nets' realistic?
I think King said it best, and I'll give it to him right after this. King said it best. If they change the mandates and Ben Simmons plays, there's something to deal with. If not, then, not really. Go ahead, Kings.
Yeah, it's going to come down to can Kyrie play home games, number one. If he can play home games, I think even without Ben Simmons, I think Kyrie and KD, I think that's enough to give Miami some problems. I definitely think Miami was pushed at 7. I think that would be a tough 7-game series. I don't think it's something you can just be pencil Brooklyn to win. And I think because Miami always matched up pretty well with them even last year. So I don't think that's something you can just pencil them to win. Although I will say I will pick Brooklyn because it's just, Jimmy's just been very inconsistent. I'm not sure if you can trust Hero to kind of win to score enough to be able to win that series for him. I would definitely pick Brooklyn in that series. However, I would not be shocked if Miami won that series, and I expect that series to be tough. So, for me with the Nets is at full strength, they're very scary. Very, very scary. If Ben Simmons was there, he was in shape and he had some time to build chemistry, I would have probably picked them to come out the East. But, them not probably going to have Ben Simmons, and even if he plays, he's probably going to be limited. It's just going to be hard for me to say that they can really go all the way or even go to the ECF maybe. A lot of things have to go in their favor right now, but they are a scary team. It's definitely a team nobody in the East wants to play early. And a lot of things have to go right for that team, but they're talented. I think that as long as the team has KD and Kyrie with shooters around them and with some size, I think you always have to be mindful of that team.
Yeah, I gotta say this. Since James Harden's left, there's been a lot more movement for them offensively. And I think that bodes well, going deeper into the season. So I'll just add that too, as far as, their viability with just KD and Kyrie. I think the other guys are more empowered now without the third star there.
So okay, got you. And sorry, just one more question. Can we now really just stick a fork in the Warriors dynasty and stop the sentimental talk and be like it's over? It's over. Or are you believing in the future? I really think it's done. Do we really believe that these injuries are just accidental? It's not wear and tear,
The Draymond is probably wear and tear with his back. I'll give that. But the Steph one tonight, that was just a freak injury, freak accident. You know what I mean? Guy diving on the ball. But if Steph's injury isn't serious, they'll be right there in the Western Conference Finals, in my opinion. If they can make it through the war with Memphis. So I don't think it's cooked, but I think they still got a window for a championship or two, in the next couple of years. So I'm not going to say it's over, Kings, what do you think?
I think, for a team like the Warriors, Phoenix is still going to be right there because they're young, but I think for a team like the Warriors, especially, this probably their best window is this season because it's literally so wide open. I think especially with even just within the West next year, you know, you see how Dallas is looking. They're young. They're up and coming. Imagine they get better. And then obviously Joker, you look at what he's doing with these pieces. Now imagine, you know, Murray and MPJ back. You know what I'm saying? That's a problem. And then we not even talk about it. Imagine Kawhi and PG come back. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Like, come on, man. Like that. That's a team with PG. They almost went to the finals with just PG. You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, if you're the Warriors, man, this is it. Honestly, I mean, obviously you still have a chance, but this is your best chance. Like this season is your best chance to get that last one, because next season the West is going to be hell. And in the East, you know, Brooklyn got three first, as Paul keeps telling me. They got Ben Simmons, who, you know, Paul putting out those whispers and some people putting out those whispers of the clutch swap because Ben wants to be in L.A. I'm not going to put too much into that. But Brooklyn has a lot of ammo to get better over the offseason. And, you know, if you're the Warriors, it's like, man, so many threats are coming back next season. You got to do it this year. And then obviously Memphis is going to get even older and they got ammo to get better too. So if you're Golden State, man, you got to do it this year.
Hey, guys, just want to say I love the pod. I listen to it every single week, man. I'm a big fan.
Appreciate you, man, for real.
Silent, you there?
Yeah, there we go. It was taking a minute for it to pop up for me. What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Hey, not much, man. Just wanted to say, you know, real quick, love the pod. Hope y'all keep it up, man. Always good knowledge from y'all. And I got two questions I want to ask. It's nothing that's, like, really current. But my first question is, how do y'all feel about the way that defenses have changed, like, since y'all first started watching hoops? I'm only 22, so I've only been watching hoops for real for, like, probably 7-8 years. At most, I'll give myself 10. But, you know, I know, like, y'all seen the 2000s and, you know, the late 90s and stuff. How do y'all think defenses changed and you know, do y'all prefer the old school style or do y'all prefer the new, you know, this modern era kind of style of defense?
Well, I think the first thing, it's adjusted based on the offense, right? Because in the early 2000s, you know, a lot of times there were two non-shooting bigs occupying the court. There wasn't a lot of four out, one in, you know, principled offenses, you know, and just the general, you know, skill level wasn't where it is today. And then on top of that, the rule changes the last 10 years. They kind of scaled it back this year a little bit, but the rule changes made it so easy, or so hard rather, to defend in space that adjusted some things. So defense became more about scheme than one-on-one ability. I think that's been the biggest change as far as defense from, you know, early 2000s, late 90s to right now. It's more scheme-based than actual, you know, sit down and stop somebody in general. So that's been the biggest change for me. I think if they just dial the rules back, like get rid of all these touch fouls, it would be great because these guys are so skilled offensively. You got to give the defense a chance. And I think that's, you know, what's been missing over the last 10 years. Like I said, they scaled it back a little bit this year, but in general, man, it's been so hard to defend these last 10 years. So, you know, That's the thing for me. It's the rules more so than the actual, you know, what I prefer. Just scale the rules back and give these guys a chance to guard these guys, and we can see, you know, who's really who.
Yeah, you know, it's the combo of the rules, also the type of the philosophy of offense. Yeah, the rules has allowed offense to be a lot more spaced out. You have to cover a lot more ground on defense, so for guys have to be a lot more mobile. It used to be that if you were strong and physical, you didn't have to move as much defensively. In terms of covering ground, it was more short bursts defensively and using your strength to impede guys driving to the rim. But with the spacing and the shooting, guys have to, you know, be more agile, and it's just harder to defend in space too when you have the rules against you where you can't, you know, use some of your physical advantages to be able to stop guys from getting to the rim. And you know, these guys are a lot more skilled now, so it's easier for them to break dudes off the bounce. The NBA defense now is a lot more foot speed and feet oriented. You got to be able to stick with your man on your feet and be able to react. But also, the schemes have changed too. You've seen a lot more zones, a lot more exotic looks, because it's like, it's just so hard to guard one-on-one. You got to be able to, as a team, stay on the string. It's really a lot more team defensive oriented. Mm-hmm. That's why you see all the metrics value team defense, because team defense, honestly, is very important now. I mean, you still get high. You still need individual defense. That still matters a lot, especially when you get in the playoffs and it slows down. You get that more throwback style where it's like you have to be able to sit on your man, guard chest to chest. That's why the Jazz always flop every single playoffs, because their dudes just can't guard chest to chest. And Rudy Gobert can't cover up all your mistakes when they're screaming him out the paint every single playoffs. But in the regular season, when it's up and down, yeah, he can, because it's like, you know, you funnel him in, he defends, blocks the layups. So now it's like just a 3-point contest and like an open gym run. But that's like the thing with defenses now. It's like it's a lot more value towards funneling guys to rim protectors and playing on a string, as opposed to that man to man style, where you really mainly see that when you get to the offs. And you know, I think too as well, some of these coaches, I think though, when you have to be able to balance out trying to win in the regular season, trying to win in the playoffs, because you just get in trouble when you do too much funneling into bigs and you do too much trying to play into the you know, using rim protectors to take away the layups, as opposed to trying to force tough shots. Like you look at a team like the Celtics, for example, that's a team that's built for the playoffs defensively, because yep. They have guys who can sit on their man. They got bigs who are able to come outside, be able to protect the rim. All those guys swarm the boards. All those guys know how to help. All those guys know how to recover. They really just play every aspect of defense at a high level. So in today's game, you really have to play. If you want to be an elite defense, you got to be good at multiple aspects of defense, whereas you could be a defensive specialist more often in the past era, because it was more slow.
All right, man. Yo, I appreciate the really detailed answer. That's something that I've definitely noticed myself, like, as I've looked at more Gobert film and as I've gone and watched, like when I watched AD's playoffs in 2020, that's something I noticed, like, I feel like as the times are changing again, and bigs are coming back into the fold, now we starting to see like that value for rim protection kind of come back up. I don't know if it ever really went away, but I feel like for a while people were putting a lot more emphasis on, you know, wing defense, just perimeter defense in general. But you know, that rim protection is still elite. Last question, I wanted to ask y'all real quick, just another historical question. I ain't trying to call y'all old, by the way, but who would y'all take in a 7-game series over pretty much, you know, any other team in history?
That's a good one. I'm going to be biased and say the 0-1 Lakers, man.
Damn, you said in history. That's a tough one, bro.
Go ahead, K. I know you want to say 2016 Cavs. Go ahead, man.
If anything, I'll probably go 2012 Heat. If anything, that'll probably be my biased pick for a team I take. I just like how they match up with everybody, and Wade was still had a lot of juice left. It was before, you know, the knee drain started to really get to him.
And obviously the Warriors, when they had KD, are in the conversation. Like
objectively, that would be my pick, but you know, I can't.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately.
Right, that team was just a cheat code. So yeah, there's our answer, bro. All
right, yo, I really appreciate it, boys. Have a good night, man.
Jalen, what's going on, man?
Y'all can hear me.
Yeah, what's going on, bro?
What's happening with y'all, man?
What's good?
Let me see. What was my first question is, what do the Warriors do with Wiggins?
Looking at their tax bill, and I'm not as tapped in as to the Warriors as I am with a few other teams, my guess is probably Wiggins and Wiseman get moved in a package deal, because they got to pay pool. So I think they get those two guys off the books for like a pick or something down the road. That's my guess, because I don't think they're going to – because pool is going to command about 20 mil per, and they're not going to add that to their already massive tax bill, in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think moving Wiseman and moving Wiggins, they're gonna probably try and get, like, you know, a cheaper starting wing, yeah, starting power wing, maybe a Thad Young type, and you know, then also probably maybe draft compensation second round. But I don't think they'll be as concerned about second draft compensation. It's more of just getting a decent wing that they could play. And then freeing up cap to sign Poole, I think that would be their two main points, because one, You know, at this point, I don't think they see a much of a value for Wiseman. I think they'd much more rather go to the find a big in the open market that's cheap, that could fill that five role in spurts. And I think, you know, Wiggins is a great two-way wing, but his contract just doesn't warrant the consistency he gives. So I just think they'll be fine just finding a, finding more of a three-and-D defender. You know, it doesn't have to be as heavy on the three, but just finding a wing who can guard and get a spell Clay from having to guard big wings. I think that'll just be their priority.
Right. So, Kings, what do you think? I think they're all in on Moody and Kuminga because they're cost friendly at this point. So what do you think about them moving Wiggins and Wiseman for that center? You know what I mean? That's what I think will happen.
Oh, go ahead, Jalen.
That's what I want. Yeah, I said, no, that's what I want to happen.
They go all in on Kuminga and Moody. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah, I mean, I could for sure see that. I mean, I mean, for me, it's like you just get that wing to get that vet presence, you know what I mean? Get that depth, you know what I'm saying? Like, just had to have on the bench so that, you know, if the lights get too bright for the youngins, you can throw the vet in there. He could just fill his role, you know what I'm saying? So you always just want that vet wing because you never know what young, you know, teenagers and young, super young 20-year-olds finna give you. But I absolutely think they're all in. I mean, you saw today that Kerr trusted those two early against a team like Boston who's been hot. So I just think that, you know, they understand the talent they have with those two, and they're thinking smart. It's like, hey, let's get them up to speed as quick as possible. I think their ability to compete next season is going to be rely heavily on those two. This season is going to be a lot more on the three core to be able to take them home. But I think for them to be able to, you know, to overcome the type of talent you're going to see in the West next year and the revamp Nets that I'll probably pick to come out the East, you probably need Moody and Kuminga to really pop next season and be high-impact players.
Okay, I got one more question. Y'all can both answer, but this is really for Kings because this is squad. What do the T-Wolves need to get to that next level? Because I feel like they got a PG. They got two young stars. I don't really know who's the number one out of them two. You know, they got Pat Bev. He brought another dynamic. You got Vanderbilt. But what else do they need?
Experience.
Yeah.
You going to get the experience.
You don't think they need another player, though?
I'm going to let King's squad. King's take it, baby.
Yeah. So I've always said, you know, I know we got a PG, quote unquote, but I really think we do need a better facilitator than D'Lo, unless D'Lo really just keeps taking leaps, because D'Lo's always had playmaking chops and he's always had the ability to pass and be a cerebral playmaker. He's just committing to that role, but he seems to be buying into it, you know? So, I mean, if he's going to keep taking leaps, I guess I won't be as heavy on that, but I've always told Maples, man, Cat is not a rim protecting big. The best you can hope with Cat is like the Jokic thing, deflections and positioning. We need a power wing badly. We're going to need a power wing. We need that, Ben Simmons, Jeremy Grant, Jermichael Green type of archetype, or Thad Young, a dude who can play the four, but is versatile enough to guard some fives and is going to be a rim protecting off ball threat. We need that. And then we also need a true wing defender, a true perimeter wing defender. I think that's going to be, because for us to have the starting lineup of D'Lo, Ant, Cat, we also need the power wing, and then we need the true wing defender. I think if we can get those two and then everybody else develop, I think, okay, we can really do something potentially special. But, yeah, so that's the two I'm looking – that's the two positions and the archetypes I'm looking for them to fill in.
For sure. I'm out of here, man. I just had to tap in with y'all. I seen y'all on this other platform. I see what y'all did, by the way, not doing it on Twitter because it get janky over there. This is more – it's more chill over here.
Yes, trust me, it's a method to the madness, man. Appreciate you, Jalen.
Yes, sir.
Steven, what's going on? You the last one, man. I know you've been waiting your turn, man. My fault. What's good, brother?
It's all good, man. What's going on with y'all? Hollering at y'all from the bayou, man. When y'all talk about the West going to be a problem, man, why y'all ain't speaking about that other team in the Southwest?
Wait.
All right, so
waiting on the boys, to put down the crayfish and all that, you know, get on the court. You feel me?
So look, Steve, I'm gonna just say this: if they can get all three of those boys on the floor, man, and keep them on the floor for 65 plus games, I will say that they'll be a solid playoff team, which means they'll avoid the play-in. But I just think you got – so this is the West next year. You got the Warriors coming back to whatever they're doing. Phoenix is going to be here for a while. Clippers are getting, you know, PG and Kawhi back. Nuggets getting Porter and MPJ back. I mean, Porter and Murray back. Also, you got the Lakers, you know, as long as AD and Brian going to be there, they're going to have a chance to do something. We got the GM just can't get an F-minus in the offseason, right? So that's five teams right there, plus Dallas. That's already six. But if you got CJ, B.I., and Zion for 65-plus games, I'll say that they'll avoid the play-in. Like, that's the biggest ceiling I can give them right now because and it's not a shot at the Pelicans. It's just how deep the West is, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, man. I just want y'all to talk about it, man. We don't get too much love nationally if it ain't negative.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, I'll show y'all love. You see Damon just put in the chat, Jason Mappels.
Oh, I see that.
I'll show y'all love, man. B.I. over there, I'll show y'all love.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all. Keep doing y'all thing. I know I stay following both of y'all on Twitter. And I follow y'all podcast all the time.
Man, appreciate
the love, bro, for real.
All right, you guys, that's going to wrap it up. We went a little longer. We appreciate y'all. That's just the love that we got from y'all. We only wanted to go like 30 minutes. We ended up going longer because y'all showed us a lot of love, a lot of interaction. We got a new episode coming to y'all next Monday. This one will be up tomorrow. And then we'll see you guys again live next Wednesday, man. Y'all be safe.